All right, looks like it's about time. Let's go ahead and get started. So this is DevB310, getting started with TypeScript. I'm Jonathan Turner. I'm the program manager of TypeScript at Microsoft. In this talk, I'll be giving an introduction to the TypeScript programming language, basically kind of telling the what and the why of the TypeScript language, and also kind of diving in and talking about some of the basic features that set TypeScript apart. Why would you use TypeScript? Once we have a sense for those basic features, we'll use those features to convert a JavaScript project from JavaScript over to TypeScript. We'll see this kind of gradual conversion process that's possible and really get a sense for the benefits of using TypeScript. If I've done my job and convinced you to try TypeScript after that demo, I'll talk a bit about the TypeScript community and some of the files and community projects that will help you get started in your own TypeScript projects. So let's talk about TypeScript. To understand TypeScript, first we need to talk a little bit about JavaScript. Back 20 years ago when JavaScript was first created, it was created more to give static web pages a little bit of life. You know, in 300 lines of JavaScript, you might be making a little monkey dance on the screen. Fast forward those 20 years, and now we've got JavaScript having to support applications that are not 300 lines of code, but now 300,000 lines of code, or 3 million lines of code. Your Outlook.com and Office 365, these kinds of websites are made with large amounts of JavaScript. But because JavaScript was never really intended to scale to those sizes, really, it has some challenges to scale to that size. What TypeScript does is step in with a superset of features on top of the standard JavaScript language that help you scale to that size and then compile away, giving you nice, clean JavaScript output. This compilation process and the tooling work in any browser across any host, any OS, because what we're compiling down to is standard JavaScript. So it works anywhere JavaScript works today. And all of these components, the compiler and the language service, are open source. So you can grab them and, if you want, even look at them and make changes, as some people who have used TypeScript have done to good effect. So let's actually dive in a little bit more to understand what do we mean by a superset of JavaScript. So TypeScript starts by being JavaScript. So fundamentally, it is based on the standard JavaScript language. So it has all the features. If you're used to doing JavaScript, it has all the features that you already expect out of JavaScript today. But being a superset, it has two additional features that make it a very compelling tool, in my opinion. One is that you can use JavaScript standard JavaScript today. I can copy and paste code from the web. I can use my existing JavaScript projects and can easily convert them into TypeScript just because TypeScript is that superset. It already supports all the stuff that I would have in my JavaScript code. This also means that I can use third-party JavaScript libraries, so jQuery, Angular, Ember. These kinds of libraries are already fully compatible with TypeScript. So I already have a large array of libraries just because of the JavaScript community's work. So we start with this fundamental JavaScript, standard JavaScript. So what is the superset piece of it? So for us, we're adding a couple of features. One, an optional static type system, meaning that depending on how much I want to sprinkle types in my code, it's totally up to me as a programmer. There's no requirement that I take my JavaScript code and from top to bottom add in type information. Here it's up to me to say where it's appropriate and when. And we'll see how this affects tooling and how we can still get quite a bit of good tooling out of this kind of optional types. Addition to the types are classes and modules. So when JavaScript was first created, and even modern JavaScript today, all your abstractions for trying to encode, if you wanted to class-based object-oriented programming or more modular programming, you would have to encode those into functions. So you'd have functions inside of functions inside of functions, trying to encode your intent to have object-oriented programming. Because of the class-based features that we've added to TypeScript, you can just write classes directly, as we'll see here in a few minutes, to get that object-oriented style that you may be used to from C# or Java. Finally, all of this compiles down to just JavaScript. So there's no cost to using these abstractions. There's no cost to using the type system in that runtime code. All of it gets compiled away to nice, clean JavaScript. And again, all of that runs on any host, any OS, because it's that standard JavaScript. So what I'd like to do is to take you through an introduction to see how those features work. So what we're seeing is the typescriptlang.org. This is a great place to get started if you're interested in TypeScript. There's documentation, samples. What I'll show here is the playground. The TypeScript playground is a hosting of Monaco, you may be familiar with from Visual Studio Online. Because the TypeScript compiler is written in TypeScript, it can compile down to JavaScript, and then we can run that JavaScript in the browser. So this is running a full IDE and a full compiler all in your browser. It's taking the left-hand side, which is the TypeScript, and compiling it to the right-hand side, JavaScript. You'll notice right off the bat, I've just copied in some JavaScript. And that JavaScript is one-for-one being compiled to the output on the right-hand side. Let me go ahead and run this example. If I click the button, we get a pop-up that says, hello, object. So obviously, there's a bug in my code. So let's see if we can figure that out. If we look at the code now, knowing that there's an issue, we can probably eyeball it and find where that issue is. For those who are more familiar with JavaScript, your eyes probably popped right to it. But as you can imagine, this is with 17 lines of code. When we scale to 17,000, this actually becomes quite tricky. So what we'd like to do is to have TypeScript help us find these issues for us. Of course, the first way we can do this, and the main way, is using what's in the name TypeScript. Is to start decorating this set of functions with some type information. And if we decorate in the right places where there might be that mismatch, we should be able to catch where that error is. So here I'm going to say that the parameter to greeter is a string. I put in a single type annotation, and that one type annotation was enough because that mismatch was between the caller and the callee of the greeter function to catch it. So if I mouse over this, it's going to tell me on one side you said it was a string, on the other side you're calling it with an object. So there's this mismatch, and I get a warning. There's another way I could have solved this. So let's go ahead and fix it first to prove to ourselves that we found the error. And if I run this, hit the button, we've got hello world. So it looks like we've solved it. Let's go back to having this as an object and write this a slightly different way. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take string and replace the type string with something that represents an object that has a string as one of its properties. So I'll type greeting, and once I hit dot, you'll see that I'm dotting into message, and I'm getting IntelliSense based on a single type annotation. So let me go ahead and select that, and if I run this, all right, so we've solved it again. Here, notice that types help you do two things. They help you catch those errors where there's a mismatch. They also give you really precise IntelliSense. I could have written this object type in another way using an interface. So let's write an interface, iGreeter, as a message string. And let me replace this object type with iGreeter. So this is equivalent to what I had written before, but it's a nice, more readable way of writing that type. Something else that's worth noting is that iGreeter is an interface, and you might be used to languages like C# and Java, where if I have an interface, I have to explicitly say that some value implements it or some class implements it. Here, just because this object has the correct shape that interface expects, that's enough to satisfy it. So this is called duct typing or structural typing. As long as the structure of that object is a match for that interface, then the compiler will let it through. This works really well with how Java is a very flexible, dynamic language, and you need a type system that works with that kind of flexible dynamism. So when I say that we have to work with this flexible, dynamic language, TypeScript's interfaces are actually capable of describing any type that you would see in the JavaScript programming language. So here I have a single message property. You can also write the type of functions. So for example, I have a function that takes a string and returns a string. So it's got a single parameter string and outputs a string. Likewise, I can make something that resembles an array. But because of the flexibility of JavaScript, you can actually make hybrids of things. You can make a function that also acts like an object, or an array that also acts like an object. And TypeScript's interfaces are capable of describing those too. So if I brought back that property from before, you see this thing is both a function and an object that has this property message. So really just to bring home that interfaces here are capable of describing any JavaScript, and this comes to great use, as we'll see a little bit later. So this is kind of the optional type system in TypeScript. I can describe my interfaces, I can sprinkle some types, and then start getting that IntelliSense and error checking. Next thing I'll do is I'll show how to use classes. So the class syntax should be pretty familiar if you're used to other object-oriented languages. Here we have a class, and then we create a new instance of class. One thing you'll notice is that everything is public by default. And this kind of matches with the JavaScript way of thinking. Everything is generally public by default. But this class syntax actually also comes from the next version of JavaScript that's currently being designed today. So when ECMAScript 6, which is what the standard is called, comes out, you'll actually be able to use this same syntax there. So this is kind of a way to learn the future version of JavaScript now and get some good benefit. Notice that the class syntax is compiling from the left-hand side. You'll see the equivalent JavaScript on the right-hand side. And that JavaScript is the JavaScript that you'd have to write by hand, but maybe you don't necessarily want to. But you can see how that's being encoded by the compiler for you. So you can stay using the class-based syntax and get a JavaScript that works across any browser, any OS, because what's coming out is that nice compatible JavaScript. Just real quick, let me show you, if we wanted to, we can start annotating those properties with public and private to be more clear. So if I dot into greeter now, we can see it has those two properties, greet and greeting. If I said this was private and then dotted into it, then I'd only get the one. So what this does is allows you to be really specific about your API, and so at development time or design time, you can catch errors and get IntelliSense that's nice and accurate. But notice that the right-hand side, the JavaScript isn't changing. So we're not having any overhead or penalty for choosing to describe your API in a certain way. We still give you that nice, clean JavaScript. Just quickly, I want to show you inheritance, so you can see what that looks like. And again, it's very readable. You have an animal. You've got a snake that extends animal. So you can set up your inheritance like so. The right-hand side, you'll see the kind of JavaScript you would have to write to encode your intent of having inheritance in JavaScript. This keeps you from having to write that, which to me personally, I think is actually a bit of a nice nicety. Okay, so we talked about interfaces and classes. Let's quickly talk about generics. So generics are a way of being able to work with many types instead of a single type in your function in your classes. You've probably used lists or arrays before that are generic containers. Here we can still write that those generic types in TypeScript and get that nice clean JavaScript. So again, you'll recognize the right-hand side. So we've introduced generics, we have generic types, but none of that really translates to overhead for us in the output JavaScript code. We'll see generics a little bit here later. Finally, you can group your related classes and interfaces and functions together into modules. So this is a great way of pulling code out of your global namespace that would have all of these, you know, properties and whatnot. You can group them into related modules and then see nice, clean separation in your components. Notice here that we have to export first. So instead of, unlike classes where there's public by default, here nothing is exported by default, making sure that you're always exporting exactly what you want your API to be. You see we dot in the sayings.greeter, and that's how we access it. So this is a fully qualified name, making sure that everything is in that nice namespace. So just to recap, we have interfaces. Interfaces are capable of describing any object that you would describe in JavaScript. And each interface or each type is implicitly met. So if it matches the particular shape that's required, then that's good enough. For classes, we have classes to let you program in a more object-oriented idiom. Rather than having to encode it in your JavaScript, you can write it directly in TypeScript, and then that will get compiled down to JavaScript for you. Again, this comes from the future version of JavaScript. So the style of programming that you're learning today with TypeScript does translate forward into that future version of JavaScript. I showed a little bit of generics, where you can create functions and classes that work across multiple types of types, instead of single types. And again, we'll see another example here shortly. And modules, where you can group together your related classes and functions and interfaces in a way that gets them out of the global namespace and into separate namespaces. This is great for good modular programming or componentized programming. So we have enough information now to actually use these to convert a project from JavaScript over to TypeScript. So let's do that. So what we've got is a small JavaScript application that I've written. Let's run it first, and then we'll take a look at what it is. This stands up. We've got an audio file viewer. Some of you may recognize those WAV file names from the yesteryear Windows. I can click through these WAV files, and as I do, it draws it on the left-hand side. So let's see what we've got. If I open the HTML file, we've got three JavaScript files that get loaded for this functionality. We've got a canvas on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, we have this file select. So altogether, that kind of is where our application is. Let's quickly look at these files, since we'll be using them through this demo. Audio file is what's loading the WAV file for us. It's going to create an object that represents the WAV file. Once it's loaded, we also have another function, display audio file, and that'll be displaying the audio. So this will be what draws it into the canvas for us. And lastly, we have app.js, and this will set up the callback between the two. So once the file is loaded, it can be called through into the display, and then that's what's displayed in the canvas. So we have enough knowledge now to start taking this JavaScript project and moving it over to TypeScript. So let's do that. The first thing that we need to do when we start moving JavaScript projects over to TypeScript is just rename the file from .js to .ts. So I'm going to rename this file from JS to TS. When I first do that, it says, you're about to change the file extension. Are you sure you want to do that? Which is generally not a good idea to be willy-nilly changing your file extensions. But because TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript, this is perfectly safe. Anything that was valid JavaScript still is valid TypeScript. So we're going to say yes. Give it a second, and what happens next is that Visual Studio converts my project from a JavaScript style project to one that can handle TypeScript. It lets me know that. And then it says, would you like to search for type information for JavaScript libraries. So there's a set of additional files that we can get from NuGet to make our IntelliSense even better. I'm going to say no for now, but we'll come back to this later on in this demo. You can see there's a couple of errors, but we'll ignore those for now. And I'm going to go ahead and continue renaming our files. All right, so let's make sure we're nice and set up. So we've got the JS files are now renamed to TS files. If I build this, you can see down at the bottom here, that we're going to see a bunch of errors. But what's interesting about these errors is this is the compiler saying that there are things about the JavaScript that it's not quite sure. It can't quite check to make sure we're correctly using the types that it can infer. But because we started with the JavaScript that already worked correctly, we can actually ignore all of these errors and run what we've got. We'll get a message popping up that, yes, we saw some errors, but we can ignore that. And we still have that working application. So we're right now already using TypeScript. You can think of switching from JavaScript to TypeScript as like setting a dial. You can dial in as much of the features of TypeScript as makes sense for your project. There's no requirement that you ever dial it all the way up to get everything. So we've done the rename to TS. Now when we pull up these TS files, we see that there are these error messages that we saw earlier. So what does this mean? What we can do is we can actually mouse over and see, we reach into the document.getElementID, and we access something that's very specific to our application. We're actually reaching into the web page and getting the object named file select. So there's something specific to our project that we need to tell the compiler about. Here, the best it can infer is that this is a very generic HTML element. It's not even sure which kind of HTML element. It just says, this is some kind of HTML element. So what we're going to do is we're going to give it a little extra help. We know file select. We looked at the web page before. Now this is something of an HTML select element. So we're just wing it, knowing that there's a select something. And sure enough, there's exactly that, an HTML select element. So this allows us to give the compiler a little extra help. And then notice once we do that, it can infer the rest and know that, you know, if I dot into it with the select index, we can start getting the IntelliSense. Let's see where this actually is coming from. I'm going to go ahead and go to definition on this HTML select element and pull that up. So behind the scenes in TypeScript, there's a set of interfaces that are describing everything in the HTML DOM, everything in the JavaScript API, so that you don't have to remember it, which for me is like a godsend, because I don't want to have to remember everything in the DOM. I don't want to have to remember everything in the API. So I can, with just a little bit of help, I can be dotting into this and be getting that full IntelliSense experience. So this tells me everything just like I would have if I were using C#, for example. Let's go ahead and continue fixing these errors, because this is quite nice to get the IntelliSense like this. Look through, okay, so there's another place where we reach into the web page and make some changes. So let's go ahead and do the same kind of cast that we did before. Here, the same thing is true. The best I can infer is HTML element. So we need to tell this that it's a canvas element. I'll start typing, and sure enough, there's just as predictably so, there's an HTML canvas element. So if I go ahead and build this now, we should be getting pretty close to having no errors. Well, there's one error left. And if we go look at that error, we see that it looks like we've actually mistyped something in our file. So here was scale factor with an OR at the end, and here's scale factor with an ER at the end. Okay, that's interesting. So what's going on? So there are some WAV files that are these 16-bit WAV files, and some WAV files that are 8-bit WAV files. If any code, the code path going down the 8-bit one apparently was never caught by our unit test. Maybe we got lazy that day. And if we run this, it's quite possible that one of those WAV files that were in our project is an 8-bit WAV file rather than a 16-bit one. So we were clicking around, everything seemed to be fine, but sure enough, one of them was an 8-bit WAV file. Had we tripped across that, we would have seen it, but unfortunately we might have deployed and our users might have found it for us. So let's go ahead and fix this. And rename scale factor with an ER back to an OR. Notice, once I make the change, the compiler takes the squiggles away. It now knows that there's a scale factor. And then when we run this, we should actually be able to click on that file that was giving us problems before, and we can see that that's now been fixed. Thank you. So this is really handy. This doesn't prevent you from having to write unit tests, but what it does is it gives a nice complement to writing unit tests. I can write my unit tests, and I can use the type system to give me that extra little bit of help to help find issues just like this. The next thing that we want to do, now that we've converted the project over and we've gotten rid of all those type warnings, is to get a little bit more benefit. So let's move from doing this annotating with type information to beginning to use classes. Come back over here to AudioFile. AudioFile kind of shows off an idiom that's really common in JavaScript. I've got a function that doesn't really do all that much, other than the stand-in, and then so I can say new and then start jamming things onto the object that comes out. This is very, very common in JavaScript. They kind of expand an object up with all the features you want. While it's very flexible and very powerful, it's also powerful to describe this up front and say what should be in that class to begin with, and to catch me if I ever put anything on the class that shouldn't be there. Again, that would catch things like the spelling error that we saw earlier. So I'm going to start changing this file to be a little bit more declarative. The first thing I'm going to do is I've got at this top an audio format. This looks like an enum, but because JavaScript doesn't have enums, it's not one. But TypeScript does, so that's kind of handy. Let's switch this to being an enum. Great. So now we have an enum that works just like before, but also has the type information as of being an enum. So it's a little bit safer than we had. The next thing we'll do is we'll replace this function, which really isn't helping us very much, with a class that has all of the members already typed out for us. So now I've documented what that final object should look like. If, for example, I had written one of these incorrectly, they would start to light up, and we could catch it. Again, this prevents us from adding things that aren't part of the class. So for example, had I said, X here, it would start warning that there is no X on that object. The types help me do something else that's really difficult to do in a dynamic language like JavaScript. But to see how this works, we need to add a little bit more types to our project. So we have a callback that's getting called into the load file function. Let's take a quick look at what that callback does. So we call load file, and you'll see that one of the parameters is display audio file. So when the load file is done, it calls its callback, and that callback is what's going to display the audio file on the left-hand side. So let's sprinkle enough type information in here that we can describe that relationship between what's loading the file and what's displaying the file. We've got the display audio file function. It has that parameter, WAV file, and we know this is of type WAV file, so let's go ahead and do that. The companion to this is on the audio file, we have a callback. We want this callback to match that display that we just added a type annotation for. So we see it's got a single parameter WAV file that's of type WAV file, and it doesn't do anything with the output, so we'll just say void. doesn't matter what you name the parameter, so we'll call it x. This is, takes in a wave file, and then outputs nothing. It's just void. So now we have enough type information here to describe the relationship between those two functions. What this will let us do is that we can now begin to refactor using that type information. The type information will actually allow us to safely refactor through the project. So if I wanted to, I can now refactor this data to be called, for example, wave data. Once I make that change, we can see that anywhere that we were using wave data before, for example, here, and in display audio here, was renamed for us safely. But anywhere else that was not using that particular symbol was not. So here, we had the name data, but that was not changed to wave data. So this means that that type of information allowed us to safely travel through our project, and anywhere that was specifically linked up to what we were renaming was renamed, but nothing else was. This is a distinct advantage over existing JavaScript. That basically means you would have to search and replace, hope your unit test caught it. Because the type information is allowing you to do that refactoring, it's much safer. So now that we've described our wave file using a class, we can begin to grow that class hierarchy a bit. So we've been talking about waves, but why not add MP3 files? Why not add WMAs? So let's do that. So I'm going to replace this class with a refactoring where we've got an audio file as our kind of parent class, and then we're going to subclass that with a wave file and an MP3 file. You can imagine kind of growing this out to being like a full-fledged audio viewer as we go. We've got these two types of audio files. The next thing I do is I come in here, and then my buddy is using this and says, oh, this is great to use, but I can barely see your wave files. Can you amplify those? So I'm like, okay, I'll write an amplifier. So this function will amplify my wave files for me before I display them. Great. So I'm going to call the amplify function here before we go out. And of course, we have to gain that to 11, like you do. If I mouse over it, it says there's a problem. I can't convert wave files and audio files. If I mouse over amplify, we say, I want this to work across any audio files. This should work for MP3s, this should work for waves, or anything else that subclasses audio file. But because I haven't trafficked that type information all the way through, it doesn't have enough to match on the other side. So an audio file is coming out, and that's the parent. And out is wave file, that's the child. So I need to use more specific type information here. And this is where generics come to the rescue. So I can say that amplify is generic, so it's going to take a generic type T. It's going to take that as both its input and make that its output. So if I call this with wave file, a wave file will go out. If I call this with MP3 file, MP3 file goes out. Once I make that change, the compiler says, okay, that's nice, but I don't have enough information about T to know that you're allowed to call things like data length and data on that. So we need to give it a little bit more information. By default, it knows, because it knows nothing about T, it's gonna warn us. So we need to document what is the requirement of anything that we're passing in. Right now, we know that that is audio file. So anything that has the same shape as an audio file should work correctly. We say T extends audio file, and now any of those types, MP3 or wave file, will work with amplify. And notice that error goes away. So let's go ahead and run this to make sure that this works. That definitely looks like it was cranked to 11. So amplify does work. So we've now kind of worked our way through adding some interfaces and gradual types, classes, refactoring and started to work our way through generics. The last thing that I want to do is to begin moving this code base from using that set of things to being a more modular code base. So everything right now is all in the global namespace. So as we grow to bigger and bigger projects, this is going to become harder to maintain. But what we can do is we can begin to use the modular features of TypeScript. And another reason you might want to move to more modular features of TypeScript is that here you see at the top, we have those three JavaScript files, the audio file, audio, display audio, and app.js. And each of those, if they have dependencies between those files, then we can manage those dependencies ourselves because there's only three files. But as you can imagine, if I try to scale up to 1,000 lines of JavaScript or 1,000 files of JavaScript, managing the dependencies, so the order of loading between each of those files, actually can become quite cumbersome. Luckily, JavaScript has a way of managing this for us using what's called a JavaScript module loader. So you may have heard of require.js or node.js. These have ways of loading these JavaScript files. And once it loads one, it goes and looks at the dependencies of that one, make sure those are loaded first. So it does a nice way of ordering those loads automatically for us, rather than us having to do them manually. So let's start moving our code base from being, again, this kind of everything in the global namespace to being more of that modular style. In order to do this, let's start with audio file. Like I showed before, modules are created, you can say, with a module keyword, but there's another way to create them, which is to begin exporting features out of your file and treating the entire file as a module. So let's do that. I'm going to export export audio format, and then I'll just start begin exporting any definition that looks like it'll be helpful outside of this module. Notice it's really up to me to what I export. So I could, for example, not want to export amplify or read16, read32. They definitely sound like helper functions, so let's not export those. Let's export load file. And once we've done that, it looks like, okay, that's the end of this file. We've actually now fully converted this over to being a module. Let's do that with our other files. So we've done that with audio file. The next one we'll work on is display audio file. And you'll see that we've got squiggles underneath wave file. And why is that? Because now wave file isn't part of the global namespace. We've actually moved it into a separate module called audio file. So let's load that audio file. We do that with an import statement. So here we'll import. So this statement basically says, go load that audio file module, and then when this compiles down, it will be telling that the module loader to load it for us. This is a way that in each file, we're saying what its dependencies are, rather than having to globally order them. But because we've loaded that module, we still haven't quite finished. We need to dot into it, just like before. We have to qualify the name into that module. So we'll start by typing audio file. You'll see the IntelliSense kick on. And now we can reach into anything that we've exposed before using that export. So here we'll take WAV file. And now this, the errors go away, and we've got enough information to type check. We've got the function here that also needs to be exported. So let's go ahead and export this function. And once we do, now we've made display audio also one of these modules, which means that now both display audio and our file loader audio file are our external modules. And we can load both of these. So let's do that. And again, the same change that we did before, we'll have to do here. So load file is not global. We'll have to dot into audio file to get there. Great, and the same on this side. And you can see the IntelliSense helping me out as I'm typing this, which is nice. Okay, so we're almost there. We've been converting our files over. We've made three modules that we can load using a module loader. The next thing that we need to do is that we need to work our way through the HTML file so that we're calling into that module loader and then pulling out the JavaScript from the HTML. So we have our three scripts here, audio file, display audio, and app.js. All of these get blown away, and we'll have a single call into the require.js. So this will be starting at that root module, which is our app.js. It will load its requirements and then so forth. So it will go through that. The compiler will be outputting files that work with the module loader for us. Great. The last thing here is we have this onChange callback. So because this isn't global anymore, we're going to do this from the module itself. Let's take this out here and go back to app.ts. So we know we want to hook up this callback, and we know that it's going to hook into this HTML select element. So I'm just going to copy and paste from this HTML select element, and then I can use the IntelliSense to kind of hint me back in on change equals update selection. Great. So with this change, oh, we're almost done. Notice we had window.unload. So one of the nice things about switching to a JavaScript module loader is I don't have to be thinking about, okay, when is the onload happen, and then that's when it's safe to be running my JavaScript. It's going to be helping me do this. So I can just have, I can take this away and have just the call that sets up that first the first WAV file. If we build and we've done everything right, we're almost there. Notice we put in this HTML file, we put in a call to require.js. We have to make sure that we've got require.js. So the compiler won't actually go and check your project and all the HTML pages that you've put together. It's up to you to put in the links to the JavaScript. So as before, you saw that I had the JavaScript in my HTML page. Here I'm calling require.js, but none of the project system is actually checking that. So let's go ahead and use NuGet to go and add that for us. So I'm going to search for require.js. Great. So once this is installed, we have that in our scripts folder. We should now be able to just run and then have require.js load all of our modules for us. Excellent. So now we've fully moved through being a JavaScript project to using interfaces and the optional types, classes. We've done some generics. Here we've got a fully modularized version of our code. We can kind of prove this out to us if we want by looking at the Solution Explorer, and you can see require.js is loaded. Here's our app.ts, but then if we look at, for example, app.js, now the compiler has output that code, that extra bit of code that will do the module loading. Something else you'll notice is that we've got this source mapping URL here at the bottom. And this is something that the compiler is outputting so that you can go back to the original code from the JavaScript. So let's pull up the F12 tools. So shipping with Windows 8.1 update, which came out last month, the new version of IE now supports something called source maps. So we can use source maps to get from the JavaScript. So let me turn it off here for a second. Pull up app.ts. You can see this is that original TypeScript that we wrote, But let me turn it off, and again, you can see that JavaScript. So this is a way that in any browser that supports source maps, so now IE, but also Google Chrome and Firefox, you can be debugging directly on your TypeScript code rather than having to debug the JavaScript code that comes out. So we've kind of worked our way through modules. One of the things I also wanted to show is pulling in existing third-party JavaScript libraries. So you may be familiar with jQuery. So let's actually pull in jQuery and see if we can use that in our application. I know just where to put it, too. I've got this document.getElementById, which, if you're used to jQuery, is a little ugly. We can actually do a little bit better with jQuery, and jQuery is a nice way of describing this. So the first thing I'm going to do, just like before, I'll manage my NuGet projects, and I'll add in first the jQuery itself. All right, so once that's been installed, we have the scripts, and in addition to our require.js, we have jQuery. And let's go ahead and add the jQuery call here. Great. I want to switch this to this, and great, excellent. The next thing we want is we've got jQuery, and we can use this directly from our application. The first thing that we need to do, though, is we need to tell TypeScript I'm going to be using a symbol that is outside of my project. We do this by using what's called the declare. So if I declare, actually, let me do this just under here. If I say declare var $, so those familiar with jQuery know that almost everything is under this dollar sign. I can say dollar sign, I can call it, I can dot off of it. But once I've installed jQuery, I need a way of describing that type information. But the first thing I need to do is just say, I have jQuery, I have a dollar sign, it's outside of my project, and I'm going to use it directly. So I can just start dotting into this dollar. And if I, doesn't matter what I type here, the TypeScript compiler will just let it through. I've said basically nothing about the dollar sign, and if I hover over it, it says any. That's basically TypeScript's way of saying this could be any type, it could have any feature. I don't have enough information to say what you're doing looks wrong. But what we want to do is we want to have a nice experience with jQuery. So we can use this and we can get going and start using the dollar sign. What we want is good IntelliSense and good error checking against how we're using jQuery. So to do that, I'm actually going to remove declare var. And we'll add the jQuery typing. If you remember from earlier, we were looking at when we first converted the project over, it said, would you like to go search for those typings? So let's actually do that now. I can right-click the jQuery script and say search for TypeScript typings. When I do that, it actually pulls up a list of jQuery typings. You'll see that there's quite a number of different plugins and whatnot. We'll install that first one. And they'll pull it up for us. Thank you. But now I can start saying, let's just start typing this first line again. HTML select element. OK, great. Dollar sign, if I recall correctly, I have to say hash and then file select. Great, great, everything looks good. Oh, hold on a second. Let me comment this out and we'll take a look. So I started using jQuery. I got my jQuery typing, and that's giving me the nice IntelliSense. It's all the types and interfaces for jQuery itself. That some third party has written for me, which is great. That type information is enough type information to know that I've tried to use jQuery, but I haven't used it correctly, which, you know, being me, I just may not remember jQuery's API exactly right. I may get some of it right. But here I see that, okay, I've gone into jQuery, and now it's saying I can't convert something of the jQuery object to an HTML element. So this doesn't work exactly like that HTML select element like we had before. And why is that? Well, because jQuery is actually returning from that query an entire array of answers, not just a single answer. And I may not remember that at first until I see this error message and jogs my memory, okay, that's right. I actually need to do zero. I need to actually index into this array of answers that's coming out. And once I do that, I now have the actual answer for that select element. Let's run this to make sure that we've done our job correctly. Great. So now we can start moving the rest of our code over, if we want to start to use that jQuery. Let me just show you, though, that what that jQuery typing looks like. Just like lib.d.ts, which describes the DOM and the JavaScript APIs, here we have all of the jQuery APIs described for us by someone on the internet. They've gone to the meticulous pain of doing that API so that that type information flows in for us. You can see this is quite long. And in fact, if I pull up the there's a website called Definitely Typed. Thank you. Let's try that again. So there's a website that has a large number of these typing files for us. These are contributed by third parties into this website so that you can grab, for example, Cordova or D3. Any of these have those DTS files that you can incorporate. And then again, this allows you to use the third-party JavaScript API or the third-party JavaScript library without any change to that JavaScript library. You drop in the DTS file, and now you have enough type information to get good tooling against the library. So we showed debugging. We showed working with the source maps. Those here too, just real quick, to show you the Git contact. The kind of documentation that we can do for those DTS files are actually accurate enough that if you have a string literal, so here we have Git contacts of 2D. I may not remember those string literals, but we can actually document those strings in the API. So here I've got string 2D, and that returns a canvas rendering context 2D. And then an experimental WebGL, the same idea. So you can really model those existing JavaScript libraries in really clear detail. And then, again, you can get that type of information from sites like Definitely Typed. Okay, so we've converted our project over. We're starting to use the existing third-party libraries. Looks like we're good to go. So the TypeScript started as a kind of a small project, a CTP, in October of 2012. We've taken that project and grown it over time with the community through different versions. In 08, we were very kind of a proof of concept. By 09, we had started adding generics and began to mature along with that. We hit 1.0 recently. So you can now get, as part of Visual Studio 2013 Update 2, the full TypeScript 1.0 version. TypeScript is supported in Visual Studio. It's also part of Visual Studio Online. You might have heard of Monaco. Again, I showed that in the playground. So it's supported in there. The libraries, again, I showed a Definitely Typed website that has a lot of the library and support for not just the DOM, but a variety of existing third-party JavaScript libraries. The website is a great place, again, for getting the samples to get you going. There's a handbook on there that kind of top to bottom explains the TypeScript programming language and the features, some of the pitfalls and how to avoid them, and of course, the language specification. The community response around TypeScript has actually been fantastic. So it's grown from our early CTP days to being a very vibrant community with a forum of thousands of posts. There's hundreds of forks of the TypeScript compiler. So like I said before, it's open source. People can fork it and add new features and then send us what they want to see next in the compiler. And we've seen quite a lot of people jump on that, add new features, suggest fixes, suggest bug fixes. In fact, recently we started accepting pull requests into the main compiler that's shipping in Visual Studio, accepting bug fixes from the community. We have quite a number of feature requests. As I said, this definitely typed and other projects really are building a large ecosystem around TypeScript. So there's more than 400 of these DTS files, these typing files that describe the type information in existing JavaScript to you as a TypeScript user. TypeScript support has been added to a number of JavaScript projects. So for example, Node.js, compilation, WebStorm, the IDE, and Eclipse even have plugins that you can download and install and get the same IntelliSense experience that I was showing in other third-party IDEs for compilation and testing like Chutzpah. This has been road tested. So we started as a CTP, but even as a CTP, people started adopting TypeScript. So we saw quite a bit of adoption across Bing and Visual Studio. As you'd expect, internal to Microsoft, there would be teams that would pick it up and try it and use it. But we've also started to see a pickup externally. So teams and companies like Adobe, Google, and more were using the TypeScript compiler to build their project. Palantir was one that did the Eclipse and SitePen. You may know of the Dojo framework. They've been actively investigating it. So in conclusion, really the building out large-scale JavaScript applications can be quite tricky. You have a lot of things you have to worry about in the JavaScript, but having just a little extra help in the tooling and a little extra help on the type system side helps you get that extra layer of support that you would otherwise need from unit testing. If you're interested in learning more about TypeScript, if you're interested in hearing a little bit more about a hands-on use of TypeScript in the real world, I highly recommend going and checking out DevB339. So this developer actually has been part of a team that created Monaco, and Monaco started as a completely JavaScript application, and then they have converted that application from JavaScript over to TypeScript. And you can kind of hear the battle stories, if you will, of how he converted over and some of the tricks that they used to make that conversion go more smoothly. Again, this is on Wednesday. I'll be available if you have any questions after this talk. We may have time after this. And I'll also be available at the developer tools booth Monday through Thursday at the Languages Tools. A couple more TypeScript resources. So I talked about TypeScriptLang.org. This is a great place to get started. It has, again, the documentation, so you can read through it, lots of good samples, lots of good ways to get plugged into the community, so there are forums and whatnot on there that you can use. If you use Twitter, you can get the latest updates on our Twitter at TypeScriptLang. And the TypeScript.codeplex is another good place to go in if you want to check out the source code, if you want to read a little bit more about how TypeScript is put together, if you want to contribute patches to the TypeScript project. Definitely plug in TypeScriptCodePlex.org. With that, again, this is the pitch to come see me at the developer booth. And I think, yeah, we definitely have some time for some questions, if anyone has questions. There's some mics in the alleys. Thank you.